Away from your radio? Listen to 1010XL on the 1010XL app, a free download for all smartphone users, or say, Alexa, open 1010XL.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Tight ends left and right. Brunell with two receivers. First and 10 at the 30 of the Bills. There's the snap, the handoff. Natron wants to cut it up, waits patiently, breaks a tackle. He's at the 30. Natron, 25, 20. He's gone. He's at the 10, the 5. Touchdown, Jacksonville.
Holy smokes, talk about putting it in your face. My goodness.
Archuleta coming again. Byron turns and dumps the ball. He's gone on the run. There goes Maurice Drew. He's got a first down and more. He's at the 20. He's at the 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Maurice Drew. Touchdown, Jaguars. 49 yards.
He said he was going to have a dance the next time he scored.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at TIAA Bank Field, this is Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and Mike DeRocco.
Good morning. As we get started here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today, Mike DeRocco walks in the studio. I was surprised you didn't slink into the studio. After earlier this week showing up on with Jeff Prosser in the morning on the drill.
Yes.
And we walk in here, and there's a box of donut holes.
Right.
And I'm sitting down with the two of you, and I look over and I say, I just need to know who brought the donuts. That's all I need to know is who brought the donuts. And it turns out you had brought the donuts, so I was like, all right, then let's see what happens on Thursday.
Well,
when D-Rock walks back in the room, what's going to happen on Thursday? And it turns out nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Apparently, Mike is the important one in this relationship.
Well, I don't want to have to. Those donut holes are expensive. I don't want to have to buy it twice. Next week, well, I'm planning something special for you guys on first round of the draft next Thursday.
Okay.
No, wait, two Thursdays from now.
I was about to say, he'll be gone for the draft, which is fine if you want to bring me something for the draft.
Mike's not going to be here for the draft?
He's going up to Nashville.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I forgot. All right. Well, then I'm planning something special for you on the first day of the draft.
I appreciate it. Mike is on assignment again today, so we'll see if he can get back in tomorrow. Maybe Monday before we see Mike again. But we'll get into it. Some Jaguars talk. The preseason schedule came out, and we can probably cover the entirety of our thoughts on the actual schedule in 30 seconds or so, because it is the preseason. It was funny yesterday, D-Rock. I asked the poll question basically asking, you know, what are you most excited about for the Jaguars' preseason schedule and the national TV game and the first home game where you get to see Nick Foles basically in front of a home crowd for the first time, even if it's not really. Obviously, that would be the regular season home opener is the real first time that you're seeing him. Or, you know, just hanging out with friends, tailgating again, getting back out there and doing that kind of thing. And I left the option for other because I knew I didn't want to write as the fourth option preseason stakes. Like, I didn't want that to be the fourth option, but I wanted to leave room for somebody, if that's how they felt about it, that they could write in, you know, and say, I'm voting other preseason stakes. And that's exactly what I got from people who, like, put in the other category. 80% of the people who said other were basically, who cares about the preseason? About 10% of them were angry at me for asking a question about the preseason.
Well,
you know, which, you know, par for the course.
You know, look,
kind of thing.
The way I look at it is like nobody likes the preseason.
No.
Okay, nobody likes it. But
except the guys trying to make a roster.
Correct.
They love it.
But if you're a Jags fan and you, it's the first time you get to see the team again.
Yeah.
You know, since the last time you saw them, which wasn't very good.
Hey, guys, I'll be excited for that first day of training camp, too. And then the first day of
you
pads.
You guys might.
The first day of pads. And then the first day when they're practicing with Baltimore. Like, there will be these markers that are like, oh, the season is upon
right, it's getting
us.
Closer, yes. Now we can, you know, all those people that complain in March or May, June, I can't wait for football season to get here. Meanwhile, the rest of us are trying to take some vacation time and relax. But, yeah, I mean, look, I get excited for the start of the season. I get excited for, you know, I don't get excited for the start of training camp. But I'm eagerly, when it gets there, I'm like, okay, I know the football season's here and it's 6 weeks and we've got real games, 8 weeks, we got real games. So let's go, you know?
Oh, absolutely. The poll, by the way, yesterday, it finished up with 46% of people saying they were most excited about the first home game against the Eagles week two of the preseason. 24% said tailgating with friends. 17% said national TV game in Miami. So for all you people that say nobody cares about the preseason at all, well, apparently, even if I assume all of the 13% of the other votes are the I don't care about the preseason, that's a pretty large percent. That's 87% who had a vote on what they are most looking forward to.
And here's the thing. Like, I heard earlier coming in that Tony Boselli asked Jeff, it's like, what's your excitement level for this season?
Yeah.
And Jeff was like, well, optimistic, but he said he really wasn't too excited. I would think as a Jags fan, you should be pretty darn excited about this because you have the new quarterback, and this defense is still pretty good, still a top 10 defense in theory. It's taken a few losses, but a lot of the key guys are still there. You should pretty much be eagerly looking forward to this season because you're a contender in the division again. And who knows what happens?
So I'll ask it this way. How good is the defense?
Losing Tayshaun Gibson hurts. Mm-hmm. Certainly he was very good when called upon to deal with tight ends. Losing Malik hurts too, I still think.
It was easier to walk away from given the way he played last year.
But when he was playing just in the pass rush role, he wasn't getting home, but he wasn't. I mean, it was okay. It was pretty good. I mean, he was much, he got obviously a little bit more rest by not playing on the earlier downs.
Sure.
But, so those are things that they've got to fix and they've got to replace. But I still think it's a defense in the top 12, 13 of the league. I mean, they've got one of the best.
Yeah,
I mean, I think they've got the best, one of the best corner duos, if not the best corner duo. Jan and Calais. If Calais plays close to the same level he did last year, that's a pretty good 1-2 punch on the end. Darius is very good in the middle. If the linebackers play better, then I think that could be another top 5 unit. But if you ask me to rank them now because of the losses and because I don't want to sit there and say, well, I can definitely guarantee that Calais at 33 years old is going to play at that extremely high level again, I would still say they're a top half of the league at worst.
I would say they're top half of the league at worst, absolutely. Yes. I think, and it's the way I ask the question, I could almost feel you going, does Tony think the defense is bad?
No.
I could almost feel you feeling that, and I'm sure listeners felt that too. No, I don't think the defense is bad.
No.
I think the defense is likely a top 5 unit in the league. And I think that if they had had a top half quarterback last year, that they could have potentially been at least a team that is competing for a wild card spot in the AFC, despite how terribly everything was going on the offensive line and the playmakers weren't making plays, if you want to call them playmakers, given what they were throwing out there last year. Right?
The guys not named Didi weren't making plays.
Right. Given all those things that were going on and Chark being hurt and all this different stuff, right? I think even with all of that, this is still a defense that shut out Andrew Luck.
Who had been rolling until that point.
Like, there's still that, too. And that doesn't mean that the Tennessee game was any less frustrating. And it doesn't mean that that Dallas game was any less frustrating for a unit that I expect better from, right? There's a level of expectation. And I think the confidence of having a different guy playing the quarterback position. Look, we went through 4 or 5 days where we were watching a bunch of guys in that locker room saying, we loved Blake. It's going to be, it's sad to see him go. I didn't see any defensive guys on that train. If there were guys on defense that felt that way, and there may have been a handful of them that were willing to say it, I didn't see it.
Right.
Right? And I especially didn't see it from the better players on that defense coming out and saying, man, we're really going to miss Blake. I don't think on that side of the ball they're going to miss Blake Bortles even a little bit. And I think the confidence that you could get early in the season, you got to make it count with Nick Foles. They come out 3-1, watch this defense roll, buddy, because think it's there.
Well, and I do think, and we've talked about this before, I am eager to see the kind of impact that Nick Foles has on that defense. And that may sound weird, but based part of what you're talking about, but those guys knew that if we go out there and we give up 10,
it's done.
We can't win.
For 2 months,
10 was done. We cannot win.
Yeah.
And you're just, what do you do at that point as a defense? And it wasn't, it wasn't just Blake either. It was the frustration at the whole offense, obviously, the Leonard situation, and then Cody Kessler came in, and everybody kind of thought Kessler was going to provide the spark because he did against Houston. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't there. They have two offensive touchdowns in the final five games. I mean, two in five.
Yeah, better have that week one, hopefully in the first half.
I mean, that's just not going to get it done, and everybody knew it. And by the time we got to the beginning of December, those guys had checked out, and I'm not sure I would blame them either. I think just them knowing, before they even see Foles playing a real game, a game that matters, I think them knowing that they've got that guy there, knowing what he did with Philadelphia, I'm sure those guys watched him play in that Super Bowl. They watched him play in the postseason last year. I think that's going to make that defense even. And I do think there are guys that will miss Blake because Blake was a really good dude, and the guys did like him.
Miss the guy.
Yeah, they'll miss the guy.
Miss
exactly.
the guy, not the player.
Exactly.
And I think that's how Jacksonville feels too. Miss the guy, not the player. So in that sense, maybe everyone has expressed it exactly the way that they needed to. But
yeah, probably.
The fan feedback question of the day today asking you, with Augusta getting started, the Masters first round underway up there right now. We'll have scoring updates throughout the morning here on 1010XL. But with that getting started, asking today, what event or venue is at the top of your sports bucket list? So we'll get to some of your answers a little bit later on. We'll give our own answers on the show today as well at 1010XL Fat Tony. If you want to get involved with that, when we get back, you had the article up yesterday, D-Rock, with the fixing a draft mistake for the Jags.
Yes.
Which one you would pick since 2014. We'll dig into that and circle that around to what would that look like potentially for the Jags this year? What pick would make you the most nervous about having to write that kind of article maybe as soon as 2020 for the Jacksonville Jaguars? So we'll get into that as we get rolling here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Tony Smith, Mike DiRocco here with you as we dig into the Jags. We'll not spend a whole lot of time on Augusta. You know? And we got we'll have updates that we're playing twice an hour anyway, so they can go through all the leaderboards and all that kind of stuff, so we don't need to do too much of the SCOBY updates through the show this morning. But they are underway up there, and Freddie Couples, as he always is, at least early on, is on a leaderboard at Augusta National with a birdie there early on in his round. So we'll keep you updated throughout the morning here, and I'm sure throughout the afternoon on what's going on at the first major of the year. Let's get into the Jags, though. You had the article up yesterday, D-Rock, with since 2014, which was the year they drafted Blake, and all the guys were having to deal with those parameters. It was since 2014 you had to go back and look at what whatever team you were covering had done in the draft, and what mistake would you choose to change if you could. And as we learned when we were doing our going round by round, taking a look at the best and worst picks in each round, round one, the list of bad picks was difficult to cull down to four. And since Twitter only gave us the option to include four names, it was like, well, it could have been eight, honestly, in franchise history, and a bunch of those could have been on that list in very recent times. So you wound up landing on you would have taken Patrick Mahomes instead of Leonard Fournette. Like, if you could correct one of the things that they've done.
But it's not like I didn't have a lot of choices to go. I could have been 14, 15, 16 was
16,
pretty good.
16, they did all right.
17 or 18.
16, they did all right with Jalen Ramsey. He seems to be working out just fine.
That one's a good one, yes.
For the Jacksonville Jets. Yes. So with all the options you had, how did you wind up circling, I would have taken Patrick Mahomes over Leonard Fournette?
Well, it's partly because, obviously, we know. And this, people are like, well, no one knew Mahomes is going to be this great. Well, yeah, I know, but this is a hindsight exercise. That we know
that's
all that stuff. Yeah, like, so that's kind of how
this
it is.
Is a we're looking back.
Right,
exercise,
exactly. So for people who don't understand that, that's what we were looking at. Well, for several reasons, obviously he's phenomenal. And you know, it's a quarterback league, and obviously you would be set up for the next 5 to 7, 10, whatever, 15 years with a franchise quarterback, because I think he's definitely going to end up being one of those guys, or most likely end up being one of those guys. And then with that, you're not paying $16.5 million in dead money to Blake. You're not paying, guaranteeing $50.125 million to Nick Foles. And you're not having, what is it, 28.5 cap figure this year on the dead money with Blake and the 12 on Foles. And you've got all that extra money
You're talking about having $40 million.
Right, yeah, you have all that extra money and, where you could have used it for more free agents.
Yeah,
you could
and
use
Patrick
it for,
Mahomes is playing quarterback for you.
Right, exactly. And you could use it for the unique deal that hasn't gotten done and probably won't get done for a long time, till maybe next year or after this year. Or the Ramsey extension, which I still think doesn't get done. But anyway, you would have all that $40 million.
You could do it if you wanted to.
Yes, you could. You could.
You could do that and yawn. Like, you wouldn't be sitting there going, where are we going to get the money to do all this? You wouldn't have to be thinking about that. Like, you'd have to be thinking, in 2 years, what are we going to do to extend Patrick Mahomes? Like, that would be the discussion that you're having. Like, when we have to pay him $350 million, like, are we going to be willing to do – like, that's the discussion you'd be having as opposed to can we be competitive in 2019?
Right, and yes. And the interesting thing is, though, like, would that have made them make – the AFC title. Having Mahomes instead of Fournette, would that have made them make the AFC title game at 17? It's hard to say.
Don't know.
Leonard's played a pretty significant role in that year, so maybe they don't. And certainly I think sitting a year helped Mahomes.
Sure.
And he would have played right away. But, I mean, if you look, I mean, it just makes so much sense that to take a quarterback there because Blake was coming off an awful year. Just horrifically bad. And – I mean, just imagine the franchise flip. I mean, it's useless,
sure,
but it's a fun exercise to do. And this is what people would debate. And you'd make the same argument with Watson.
You could absolutely make the same argument. And I think when you're looking at it and having to decide which of these mistakes you'd want to correct, I would circle the quarterback mistake. The Mahomes is the first one that you go to. And not only because it's the quarterback and what's been going on here at quarterback for the last 3-4 years, right? It was coming off that 2016 season where Blake couldn't throw a ball 5 yards. Couldn't do it at times. And going into that draft, it was like, why wouldn't they? Like, why are they ignoring this? Right. Like, it just didn't make any sense at the time. It certainly doesn't make sense, 2 years later, now thinking about it too. But not only that, it's not just the quarterback position. It's a quarterback that, and Mike and I have discussed this kind of thing before, if you were going to throw every player in the league into a pool right now and say everyone's starting over and you had the first pick in a draft to start your franchise right now today, I think there'd be a bunch of teams to take Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, Mahomes. It obviously would be a quarterback. I mean, and you're not taking Brady or Rodgers because they're on the way out.
Mahomes is freakishly gifted.
Yes, and, Watson would be a guy people picked. I bet people would pick Baker Mayfield, too.
He'd be high.
Yeah.
But I still think Aaron Rodgers would go pretty high.
Yeah, probably. You're right. You'd take Mahomes.
But Mahomes might be the overwhelming choice for number one.
You take Mahomes and you go, we'll figure it out.
Like, yeah.
And in doing this exercise, I was like, okay, 2014. I would have taken Khalil Mack.
Yep.
And 2015, I would have taken, Leonard Williams over Dante Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
16, you don't change that one.
Nope.
Jalen
worked out all right.
In fact,
you were doing backflips when Dallas took Zeke. It was like, yes. I remember the draft party that night. The place went nuts.
Because they knew
Zeke's
they were getting
the guy.
Called.
Yeah.
And then last year's draft, I would have taken, I mean, it was harder to predict what they were going to do last year. 29's hard.
Yeah.
I thought they should have taken Will Hernandez. I still think they should have taken Will Hernandez. I would have if I were redoing last year's draft, I'd have given him Will Hernandez at 29.
Yeah.
And then you're not worrying about.
Right. And I think that's where fans who get upset for any of these kind of discussions, like, this is all hindsight. It's like, no, actually, this is a lot of stuff that a lot of people were saying when they made the decisions they made.
Right.
Like, it's not all hindsight. Like, some of it may be, like, to a degree, we can now look back and see just how glaring the mistakes were.
Right.
That they were making. But a lot of this was, yeah, there were a lot of people that were saying they wanted Khalil Mack when they took Blake Bortles. And there were a lot of people that said they wanted Leonard Williams instead of Dante Fowler. And there were a lot, like, it's not new. This isn't all that much revisionist.
And it's not like I'm saying, okay, we're pulling a guy from the third round and saying, should have taken this guy. All the guys they took were guys that everyone would have taken in the top five or top ten or wherever the heck they were picking. It's not, you know what I mean?
See, that points to I can remember when they drafted Rashad Green.
Mm-hmm.
And once they got on the clock in the third round, like, my timeline was full of people that were just like, if they don't take Rashad Green, I'm done with this. Like, this is so stupid. Why wouldn't they take Rashad Green? And I'm like, okay. And then they did whatever they did. And then they came back in the fourth round. They're on the clock again. And
if they don't take Rashad Green.
This is so ridiculous. And then they got him in the fifth round. And I was like, all right, you guys can chill. Like, they got the guy, and he's been ultra productive. So they were all very right about their passion.
That is my favorite thing, because it's like people will be like, who are they taking in this next round? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, look, right. I'm working here. I don't have time. Yeah. I don't necessarily keep track of who's off the board at that point. You know
sure.
what I mean? So
and
they could go in 100 different ways.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's difficult enough to figure out what's happening with five.
Right.
Today.
Right.
Like so in the fourth round, what do you think they're looking at?
Who's available? Yeah. Like those people that do seven round mock drafts. God bless them.
Yeah.
God bless them for doing it and being.
Talk about an exercise in futility.
Right. I mean it's just if you're good, if you've watched all that tape and God bless, knock yourself out. No chance that I'm going to do that. Zero chance.
What? Actually, we'll save this for the other side. I do want to get into what player do you scares you the most about having to write something about like this about, you know, in the near future, as in. What player do you look at, and this is the hands-off for me, draft prospect at number 7 for the Jacksonville Jaguars? We'll get your answer on that in just a moment.
Oh, okay.
Also want to dig into the Marcell Dareus news that came out, that the legal stuff that we've been waiting to see if it's going to clear up for him for a while now, it's clearing up, and he's mostly in the clear now, but we're still not totally done with it. We'll get into the details of what all that means for Marcell Dareus. And what that could mean potentially for the Jacksonville Jaguars as well in relation to their defensive tackle and whether the league could still get involved from this point going forward. So we'll get into that, get your answer on what draft pick scares you for the Jags at number 7 right now when we get back on the other side. You're listening to Jaguars Today here on 1010 XL.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
All right, want to get into maybe who scares you as a prospect there at number 7 for the Jags in a second here, D-Rock. But first, because we mentioned it there going into the break, Marcell Dareus, who we've known there's going to be a couple of complaints. One was down in the Tampa area, one here in Jacksonville. I believe that's correct. And
Duval County, yeah.
Yeah. And we were – last year we knew about him before the season last year. Like, we've been aware of these for a while. It felt like if anything was going to happen with him, it was going to take a while. You know how sometimes these things turn very slowly, if at all. But it appears at least on the one down south in South Florida that he's in the clear on that one, that there's going to be nothing going forward with that, but that there is still some things in play with the one up here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, there's an amending complaint that'll be filed, has been filed, or will be filed eventually, let's put it that way, and you know, they'll go from there. So that one is still in the same process that the other one was in for a long time. And, you know, they'll be, you know, who knows how long it could take. You know, once they file it, they have to apply, you know, they file the complaint and then 20 days, Dareus would have 20 days to respond, that kind of thing. So, that one's still going on at this point. But the one down in Hillsborough County, dismissed with prejudice, which means they basically – well, it doesn't basically – it means you can't bring that complaint back again.
Okay.
It's out of the court system. And you know, just reading through that stuff, I don't know if anyone's taken the time to ever read through court documents. it's not exactly – like, I'm not a bright guy, which is why I do what
I do. There's a reason people go to school for it.
Right. I mean, I'm reading through this, and I'm like, all right, Google, I got to – you know, what am I doing here? And – you know, all that other stuff. But, you know, one thing I did pick up on is you know, the attorney for the woman who filed the complaint, you know, filed a motion to, you know, withdraw as the counsel. They felt like they weren't communicating, irreconcilable differences. And, you know, apparently Dareus Camp tried to serve her with some papers and his stuff was returned. And they've had minimal, you know, the attorney had no contact with the woman. So it just kind of got dismissed and, you know, can't be brought back again. So that one is completely over and done with.
And it's the Jacksonville one has – we'll see what happens
with
it.
Yeah, it's still in the middle of the process.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens with that one. Dude, what is your sense, before we get back into some draft talk here, what is your sense of would the league – does this feel like something the league could step in on as far as some kind of punishment under the conduct policy for Marcell Dareus, even with it being dismissed?
My understanding is no.
Okay.
not. I mean, I know that they can do some of that stuff like that, but I mean, this was a complaint. It was a sexual assault complaint, and a complaint that said that he allegedly gave her a sexually transmitted disease. So, but with it being dismissed, I think if it had gone further and maybe he had settled or something like that, then that would be something that the league could look at. I mean, but who knows at this point? Maybe they sit there and look at it and go, that's just not good. That's not a good look, and sure, we're probably going to do something there. But, I mean, that thing was filed well before last July, and it just kind of came to light just before the season started. And he didn't face any kind of disciplinary action last year anyway.
No, so, and they usually wait for the legal proceedings to play out to whatever extent they're going to before they decide to do anything.
You would probably have to wait until this one in Duval County goes through as well.
Right.
Because then if you're going to do anything, you you're not want to do it twice. You could just do something once.
Right, which is why I wasn't worried about it as far as affecting whether or not Darius was going to be available to him in 2018. I thought all the legal stuff was going to take too long for it to come into play. Was curious to see what, if any, effect it might have on his availability for 2019.
Right.
You know, depending on how everything played out. And, look, if they go forward with it from a league perspective under the domestic violence side of this thing, that's a 6-game minimum.
Correct.
Like, that's their policy, is a 6-game minimum if they were to act on it at all. Again, it's not done up here in Duval County, but it's certainly a story worth monitoring with a very important player. For the Jacksonville Jaguars, and hopefully nothing happened. Like, hopefully there was nothing to any of these accusations. Like, that's what you would like for the outcome to be, but certainly something to monitor.
And I always tell people, look, there's a difference between having a case dismissed and being found not guilty.
Yes.
You know, case dismissed with prejudice, either they felt like they couldn't prove it, the judge felt they couldn't prove it, or in this case, the person who brought the complaint against was unable to be found and not really wanting to move forward and all that other stuff. So there's a difference. But, yeah, at this point, that one's done.
Sure. And if he did what the women said he did, then him missing 6 games, I don't feel bad for him.
Right, no, not at all. Not at all.
Not for Marcell Dareus or the Jags in that particular case. But let's get back into the draft and maybe trying to find somebody to help that defensive line. Is there a prospect that makes you more nervous than others among the names that have been attached to the Jags over the course of the last few months?
That have been attached to the Jags. I think Rashawn Gary was a guy that was attached to the Jags at one point, a guy that they could consider. That one I would be a little bit leery. DK Metcalf.
Metcalf, he terrifies me.
I mean, that one is not good because you're like, okay, it looks phenomenal. He could be... He could be the king of the all-airport team right there.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just ridiculous. It's like, give me some production to match that, the physique.
Mike and I were going through the numbers a few days ago here on the show. I was comparing DK Metcalf's numbers basically for his last 2 years to what DJ Chark did basically in his last season. And I was like, these are very comparable numbers between the two of them. One of them wasn't being talked about in the top 10. You know, like, they got DJ Chark at the end of round 2 is when the Jaguars got DJ. And if the Jags were able to wait until the end of round 2 to get DK Metcalf, I'd be doing backflips.
Yeah, that.
If they got a guy with that kind of upside.
Seven,
but at 7.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I'll be honest. At one point, you know, they had Drew Locke and Daniel Jones mentioned for the Jags possibly. I don't.
That kind of ended when they got Foles.
Yeah, but over the last several months, Rashawn Gary is an intriguing prospect, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you got, well, where's the production? And same thing with DK Metcalf. Okay, you're great in the combine, and you look like a Greek god. You know, I mean, like, we'll put you in the ESPN body issue right now, forever.
Oh, yeah,
okay?
He's a brick house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But where's the production that matches? And I realize that, you know, there are always extenuating circumstances, but that Michigan defense was pretty darn good. And, you know, look, you look at Montez Sweat, and he had, what, 23 sacks? I don't know off the top of my head, over the last 2 years.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the production that you would want to see from a guy that gets drafted in the top 10. And you don't see it from Rashawn Gary. But, you know, obviously teams draft on – upside and potential and you know, where they value the position. You know, so at that point, you know, someone's going to take him, probably in the top 10. And maybe turns out to be a great guy, maybe doesn't. But if you want me to say guys that I'd be a little bit leery about, it would be him and you know, DK Metcalf would probably be on that list. And to a lesser degree, Juwan Taylor a little bit. And
why?
I didn't watch a ton of Florida games last year.
Right.
But I didn't see him be like the dominant guy that I would have expected. And that's not completely logical, I guess. And I know a lot of people have said, well, if you're a great offensive lineman or a tackle, you end up playing left tackle at some point in your career.
Sure.
You know, at the end. Well, but they had Martez Ivey over there. So they weren't probably going to move him over there. I mean, and they felt like, look, he fits better here at right tackle, and that's where they played him. Now, you hear a lot of great things that he's got this phenomenal punch, and he's a really strong kid, great work ethic and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. But like when I say it, it's like back in my day, but like when I watched when I watched the Pouncies play at Florida, those guys can play in the NFL. Yes,
they're
going to be 10-year, 15-year guys in the NFL. And now, granted, I didn't concentrate on watching Juwan Taylor, and he's probably going to end up being a really, really good player. I don't think teams valuing him in the top 10 is a mistake because they see a lot of the upside, they see the traits and all that stuff, but I never was like, whoa, watching him. And that's unscientific and stupid, but again, I don't watch a lot of tape. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, I don't watch a lot of tape. So I don't know that, you know, a small degree that
sure.
I would be a little bit leery on that. But other than that, it's those other guys.
Looking at
about.
A bigger picture, forget the prospects names necessarily involved with a draft where there are people talking about three quarterbacks potentially that could be a top 10 pick, right?
Yeah.
They're talking about that kind of thing with Haskins, Locke, and Murray, right? If they're talking about that kind of thing and they're saying this is a really, really deep defensive line draft, like, but it's deep at the top. Like, the value in this draft is at defensive line in the top half of the first round. Like, that's where the value is because that's where the players are. There's a bunch of them. And you saw in last year's draft, I think there were two or three taken in the first round.
Right.
And I think some of that was, look at what's coming. Mm-hmm. You know, like, look at what's coming in 2019. We're going to get all that we want as far as affecting the passer next year in the draft. When you're in that kind of draft and you're picking seven, do you want to be the team taking a right tackle?
Well, there's a couple of ways to look at that. Like, let's just assume that they're debating between the defensive lineman that shows up there, maybe Montez Sweat, who I really love, and
Gary Oliver, any of those.
Yeah,
guys,
any of those
right?
guys. But I really like Sweat. Somebody and Juwan Taylor. Do you feel like if we take Taylor at seven when we pick in the second round? Are the defensive linemen that are going to be there, do we like them enough still? Or, you know, are we losing some from the
compared
Rashawn
to,
Gary, Oliver? The,
compared
you know,
to the way you'd feel about an offensive
right.
lineman. Especially if you're looking to fill right tackle.
Right, versus the other side, if we took the defensive guy there,
right.
these offensive tackles. Now, my understanding is, or you know, according to it's not a great draft for offensive linemen. It's okay. The tackles at the top are supposed to be him and the kid from Alabama, Jonah Williams.
Mm-hmm.
They're the two, clearly the two best. What's the drop-off to the next group in the Jags' eyes? You know, is that drop-off more severe than the drop-off of the next group of defensive linemen that they could get? And,
sure.
And if it's me, well, we've already talked. I'd take Hockenson, but if it's me, I mean, that's the guy I'd take. But if I'm going to choose between those two,
mm-hmm.
I'm probably going to choose the defensive lineman who could turn into a double-digit sack guy that we could pair on the other side with Unique Ngakoue for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years and have the quarterbacks in the AFC South going, oh, gosh, I hate playing that team.
No, I'm totally with you. We got this date and the roll and reach around the NFL coming around the corner here. We got another update coming up from the Masters. We're coming back to this tight end discussion, specifically TJ Hockenson. As we continue along, Tony Smith, Mike DiRocco here with you on Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, former Boston Patriots defensive lineman Houston Antoine would have been celebrating his 80th birthday today. Antoine unfortunately passed away in December of 2011 at the age of 72. Houston was a six-time Pro Bowler, one-time All-Pro selection with the Patriots in the 60s when he was selected as a Pro Bowler in the AFL each season from 1963 to 1968. Happy 44th birthday to former Jacksonville Jaguars cornerback Terry Cousin. Cousin spent three seasons of his 12-year career with the Jags, where he intercepted six passes in those 3 years from 2005 to 2007. That's two playoff years, ladies and germs. Cousins came into the NFL as an undrafted free agent out of South Carolina with the Chicago Bears in 1997. Also had stops with Atlanta, Miami, Carolina, the New York Giants, and Cleveland Browns during his playing career. And one player who was ahead of Cousins on the Jaguars' all-time interceptions leaders list is also celebrating a birthday today. Happy 28th birthday to Jaguars linebacker Telvin Smith. Smith was selected as a Pro Bowler following the 2017 season, has three career pick sixes on those nine picks, with the latest coming in the win over Miami last season that essentially sealed the win for the Jags. Those three pick sixes tie Rasheen Mathis for the most in franchise history, with Telvin's coming on just nine, Sheen's coming on a franchise best 30 interceptions in his Jaguars career. And that is this date in football history.
Now, let's roll around the NFL with Roland Reich Plumbing, where quality and experience count.
The New York Giants are signing wide receiver Sterling Shepard to a four-year, $41 million contract extension. Shepard was a second-round pick of the Giants in 2016, had a career-best 66 catches for 872 yards last season. Buffalo signed pass rusher Eli Harold to a one-year deal. Harold spent last season with the Detroit Lions, where he played in 13 games, recording four sacks. The New England Patriots signed free agent tight end Austin Seferian-Jenkins to a one-year deal. Seferian-Jenkins spent last season here in Jacksonville, of course, catching 11 passes in five games for the Jags. The Patriots had free agent wide receiver Demaryius Thomas and running back T.J. Yeldon in for visits yesterday as well. Earl Thomas, the safety who signed with Baltimore as free agent this offseason, said in an interview with Rich Eisen yesterday that he doesn't have any hard feelings towards the Seattle organization, even said that he would be open to the idea of signing a ceremonial one-day deal with the team when he is ready to retire, saying, quote, hopefully they'll hang my jersey in the rafters. And considering the last time we saw him wearing a Seahawks jersey was him giving him the finger as he was being carted off the field. It's nice to hear that the feelings aren't so raw anymore. A Boston University study may be taking a step towards being able to identify CTE in a living person. Up until now, CTE has only been able to be identified and diagnosed after someone has passed away. The study was done using 26 former NFL players that were dealing with thinking, mood, or behavior problems, and 31 similarly aged men without those symptoms or head injuries. The study has been described as an encouraging advance, potentially, in this science, and I'm sure football in the NFL has some very, very close eyes on what is going to be going on with it, any kind of CTE study going forward, but especially one that could potentially be able to diagnose it in someone that's still maybe even playing the game at that moment.
That would be honestly phenomenal to be able to do that, because then if you found someone, maybe you could, or if someone was diagnosed with it, you could prevent further damage. Although, you know, the question I would have is would the damage be worse if you continue to play, or is it already damage that's done? Right. Is it irreversible? You know what I mean? Could you lessen the impact? That would be fantastic. I missed that. I did not see that story.
Yeah. Came out yesterday afternoon, probably late in the afternoon, the story actually came out. And it is interesting, right? Like the idea of how far away are we potentially from somebody suffering a concussion during a game and being able to go in and see a doctor and the doctor saying, this is where your brain is damaged. You know, like, right. And what does that do to football if instead of it being like this hypothetical, yeah, football causes head injuries. Like instead of it being a, you know, that kind of thing to being football caused this head injury and you can show a player that kind of thing, how does that change the mentality for some of the guys that are playing the game? I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is.
Yeah, I don't either. But it was funny because a couple of years ago, we always do these anonymous surveys for ESPN that we put together. And one of the questions was, would you rather have a concussion or a knee injury?
Mm-hmm.
And to a man, the guys I asked all said knee injury. Or excuse me, all said concussion.
Yeah. Which is nuts.
It is crazy. Like, because they're like, well, a knee injury can take me out for an entire year. It could end my career. A concussion. I'm like, well, concussions have ended guys' careers. He's like, not this. The person I was talking to is like, not the same way a knee injury has. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you're right. I mean, that is true. But it's just crazy to me. Now, look, I don't have enough stuff up here to spare. So, you know, I would take the knee if it were me. But, you know.
You can understand where they're coming from, right? Like, there is this. The knee thing is immediate. Like, it's costing you an opportunity to go out and get your livelihood right now in the moment. It's gone, right? Like, it just evaporates. Whereas a head injury, that's something I got to pay for in 25 years.
Right.
I'm going to be paying a lot physically for having
everybody
being willing to play this
for
sport.
Something that's that far in the future.
Right.
Everybody will feel that way. It's like, oh, it's 25 years from now. It's not, you know, I can deal with that.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know that a lot of guys would change, because you're talking, you know, especially if some form of guaranteed contracts ends up in the next CBA or the one after that, guys would be like, look, you're telling me that there's a chance that I might have some cognitive issues in 25 years from now by playing this sport, but I can make, you know, $40 million over the next 10, 12 years. I don't know a lot of guys might sit there and say, you know what, I'll take the risk.
I think the vast majority still would.
Yeah.
I do. I honestly, but the guys that you're not going to make this money doing anything else. And if you're physically able to do it, you know, like I do think most guys would still choose to. There is this trickle of guys just with the advances in recognizing these things in the last 10 years. You know, there's been a handful of players that said they were made aware of it. They said, no.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that I could make really good money and I'm physically able to do this, no. My answer is no. I'm not going to put myself through it. I do wonder how big the trickle gets when it's you can walk in and a doctor says this is where you're damaged right now. Like, this isn't some hypothetical.
But
this is where you're hurt right now.
So you were guaranteed to make $12 million this year. You hurt here. How many guys are going to sit there and go, I quit?
Yeah, still the vast majority would play, right? It's like the Jason Witten thing with the – when he was dealing with the stomach – what was it? It was a lacerated
– kidney or spleen?
Spleen, I think. I think it was his spleen. And he wanted to play, and the team was like – a doctor was like, you might die. Like –
you could damage spleen, internal bleeding. Yeah, it's
Jason,
not going to be good for you.
Right, Jason, you could die. Like, if you get hit the wrong way, you could die. And he was like, show me the sheet I need to sign for you to let me play. And it's like, I do think 95% of the guys that are playing in the league, that's their mentality with it.
Right.
Right, and I think you almost have to have it to be willing to step out there, because it's an insanely violent and fast game. It's every year when we get to go out there for training camp and be that close to it, and they're not even really hitting, right? Like, they're just thumping.
Yeah, this is, yeah.
You know, and it's like, holy cow. Like, what they're doing on Sundays, that the idea that there are even people that can do that and then 7 days later just walk back out there and do it again is nuts.
Well, that there are guys that do that and then wake up the next morning.
Like, I don't, right.
You know.
And you hear all the stories from the guys who played. Like, we'll – Loggeman will tell stories. He would wake up on Mondays and he couldn't get out of bed.
Right.
Like, he was that bad off. Like, it's just, you couldn't move. You couldn't bend over. You'd have to ask people to tie shoes for you. Like, you couldn't help yourself. Like, and then 3 days later, you kind of start feeling like a person again. You're
after
still having to do two days.
After they've pumped you full of anti-inflammatories,
still
which
doing
taking 8 years off your life.
Practices during the week because TC was a maniac. Like, you're still having to go through and do all that stuff. And then 6 days later, there you are. You're doing it again. You're putting yourself through that car wreck over and over and over.
And I really don't think that the majority of people have a feel for how not only how violent the game is, but how big those guys are.
Yeah.
Like, you, Calais is what, 6'8", 300?
Yeah. He's a monster.
Yeah. I can see that written down and go, wow, I'm 5'4", so I know 6'8 is pretty tall. But until you see those guys and you realize that 6'8", 300 pounds, is chasing down maybe a wide receiver on the screen, a 5'10", 180-pound wide receiver, and laying into him at full speed.
Yep.
And those guys do that all the time, get up and do it again. Not only get up the next day, get up for the next play, because I might be like, oh, the hell with this. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
6'8", 380, or 300 just landed on my head. That hurts.
Wouldn't take too many of those to get me to reconsider.
It's crazy.
But again, you get paid big money for it, and – I think regardless of what they find out with any of these CTE studies, I think the vast majority of players would choose to play.
Right.
Because this is where they can make that money. The money's so good, you're not going to make that kind of money anywhere else. And hopefully for their sake, they do find some way to get more guaranteed money, because I think they're worth it. I think they deserve it. And the entertainment product they put on is the best. It is the best. And there's a reason that more people are into the NFL than any of these other sports. It's because it's the best of these sports, and these guys put it on the line when they go out there and do it. So, yeah, I hope for their sake they do get that guaranteed money. I don't know what they'll have to concede to get that guaranteed money.
It would be interesting.
Yeah, but I hope for their sake that they do find a way to get those kind of concessions at some point in the CBA negotiations. Want to swing back around to the tight end discussion. You mentioned a few minutes ago that you were all in on the Hockenson at 7 trade. So let's get into Hockenson at 7 and a bigger discussion about tight end that early in the draft in general when we return. It's Mike DeRocco, Tony Smith here with you on 1010XL.
Now more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Tony Smith, Mike DeRocco here with you. Mike Dempsey out on assignment. See if we get him back in tomorrow. Likely going to be Monday before we see Mike again. Want to get into the tight end discussion here. You mentioned that TJ Hockenson, if you had to handpick what you would want the Jags to do at 7.
Or what I would do at 7.
Yeah. You would go with TJ Hockenson.
I would take TJ Hockenson.
Okay.
If he can be a difference maker for this offense. He can be a difference maker for this team in an era when the passing game is more important than ever. And here's the interesting thing. Tom Coughlin wants a tight end that can do both, that can be a factor in both the run and the pass, and he's the best at it. He's a pretty darn good blocker. He has that best mix of all those guys. I'd take him. And I'm not saying he's going to be Travis Kelce or Zach Ertz or Gronk. You don't know. But everything you hear, and he's got the potential to be that kind of an impact player. So, and it's a need. And let's be honest, there are a few impact tight ends, and if you have a chance to get one, you can find another tackle. You can find a pass rusher. I mean, they got Jan in the 3rd round. I mean, you can find those guys. But if you have a chance to get the impact tight end in this day and age and give your guy who you just gave 50, you have to do everything to give your guy that you just paid $50 million to succeed. Everything you can. And he would be a big part of that.
I'm totally with you on you have to do everything you can to help Nick Foles. Here's where I diverge, all right, with the tight end thing. I think I am not of the mind that tight end is any more important today than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
No, I think it's still.
I think when you have elite tight ends, they are difference makers.
Right, and he could be that.
Right, when you find a Gronkowski, yeah, he's going to make a massive difference. That's a Hall of Fame player that you're adding to your offense, right? So I think tight end, I don't know how much more important it is. I'm about to really make some people mad. I'm going to go into a baseball analogy for this because it's the way I understand it in my head, right? I think having the quarterback and having a franchise top-end quarterback would be like being able to throw Jake DeGrom every day. That's what it feels like to me, right? You are giving yourself a massive leg up on whoever you're playing that day by having that guy. And if you could throw your pitcher every day, you would. You can't. That's not how baseball works. But it would be like being able to throw DeGrom anytime you wanted to and throw him out. That's what having the quarterback feels like to me. Tight end, to me, feels like having a first baseman that, is a plus defender. That's the way I think that defensive line, offensive line is that middle of it line. It's the center field, shortstop, catcher surrounding your – I think that's where you build it. Is right there up the middle.
I
think tight end is it's like a third baseman that can really field. Great. It's a plus to have it.
I think it's a little bit more impactful than that. And here's the thing. I don't know, and I've said it before, I don't consider Foles the franchise quarterback. Again, my definition of the franchise quarterback is we throw that term around, and that's not – a franchise quarterback is Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger.
Totally with you.
Yeah. So he's a long-term starter. He's a long-term starter.
He's the plan.
Right.
For 3 years, he's the plan.
He's a very good quarterback, at least the numbers say, or a real good quarterback. So anytime you can give the real good quarterback, Like, the franchise guy makes everybody around him better. Just look at the, the receivers that Tom Brady's had in his career. I mean, it's ridiculous. But give the real good quarterback, give Nick Foles everything he needs to succeed. And I think he makes a bigger impact, Hockenson. I like him better than the wide receivers.
I like him better than the wide receivers. I don't like him better than the defensive linemen. See, and that's where I get caught up with it is I think improving your pass rush is helping Nick Foles.
It would, yes.
You know, and I think that in a draft where the value is at that position, I can understand the intrigue of reaching for the we haven't had one. You know, it's like the Jaguars really have never had a Hockenson. They've never had that player at that level coming into the league.
Right.
You know, and so there is this intrigue, and there's the storyline that stays out there that it's more important than it's ever been. Like, I don't buy that part of it. I think there's more spread offense being played in the league than there's ever been played. I think there's more space in the league than there has been in a long time. I'm curious to see how defenses are going to adjust to those kinds of things. And part of it, I think, is you just put more speed on the field, which is why the Jags have an advantage over virtually every defense in the league because their linebackers are Miles Jack and Telvin Smith.
They run,
right? And so I think I look at all that and say, if I'm picking seven in a draft where they tell me the strength is along the defensive line and I see that they could use a defensive lineman, like I just keep coming around to why isn't everyone talking about defensive line to the Jags at seven?
Which is where I think they go. We've talked about that. Hey, I'll say this, though. Ask this question. If you think he's Travis Kelce or Zach Ertz, don't you take it? If you could add Travis Kelce or Zach Ertz to your team for the next 3 or 4 years, you'd do it in a heartbeat.
If you could convince me that Ed Oliver isn't John Randall.
But is it easier to find defensive linemen that will develop into elite players and very, very good players than it is to find the tight end that develops into a player at the level of Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz?
Maybe, but it's harder to find a center fielder than it is a first baseman. Like, and that's the bigger...
I don't know that I would consider the tight end. You need the tight end. You can't play without the first baseman, and if you've got a really, really good first baseman...
Sure, it helps.
It
helps. It helps.
I mean, I get it. We're both like, you know, opposite sides of that.
Right,
so
like,
I
understand the intrigue in a guy like Hockenson. And early on in the process, like if you had asked me right after the season, I'd be like, Hockenson. Like, I was all on board. It's the closer we get to it and the more I think about it, I'm like, tight end. Like, I'm just like it comes down to that for me. It's like tight end at seven for a team that needs help on the offensive line and defensive line. Like, there aren't enough big-bodied people in the world to be in position to get a really athletic, big-bodied person and pass up on it to go get a tight end, which is a position where, yeah, it helps. Like, if you are landing one of the elite ones, clearly you'd rather have that than have average at the position. But you have right tackle, which I am praying they could get some kind of something approximating average at a right tackle with the options that they have there right now. And with their depth on the defensive line, I don't even think it's average. Like, I think that they're really good front line, really good front line. But I think beyond that, you're just kind of scratching your head like, what are they going to get out of any of these guys? And when they were really good in 2017, when they had to go to depth on the defensive line, it was locked and loaded.
Right.
Like, they were loaded for bear up front.
Well, and say what you will about Dante, but he had 8 sacks that year.
He did.
And
as a situational pass rusher,
right,
he had eight sacks.
And right now, what's your rush package right now on third down? It's Marcel Darius inside. It's probably Calais on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's Yannick on one side. And
my guess would be Taven right now.
Yippee. Or Smoot? They could put Lorente McCray out there.
Yeah.
Yes, but would it be much better to be able to go Yannick?
Just sweat. Think about that.
Marcel Darius, Calais Campbell, and Montez Sweat.
Oh yeah, give me that. I'm all about that.
And that's where I think they go. Defensive line.
I hope they go that way. Like, and it's something we weren't talking about all that much a month and a half ago. And that was before Foles, and so the quarterback was still in there. And we went into an offseason where everything we talked about was they got to help offense, 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 offense. Like, right. that's all that needs to be. With if they don't spend a draft pick on defense, I'd be fine with it. And now we're getting closer to it, and I'm like, man, if they don't spend that seventh pick on a defensive line. Then...
A good quarterback, the good quarterback they have, will make up for a lot of the offensive deficiencies that they had last year.
I think it's hard to tell how bad the offense was. Like, I think it
was. Oh, it was bad.
I don't think it was great, right? Like, I don't think they were ever going to be a world-beating offense with the pieces that they had. But I think it was hard to, like, how can DJ Chark even develop? Like, even if he had been able to play, what's he developing? Playing with Cody Kessler and Blake Bortles and an offensive line that's having to run out guys that they're having to pull off the street, essentially, and throw out there. You know, like, what are they developing at that point? It got so miserably bad on that side of the ball. Well, now they're coming into a season where the offensive line is back and at least the front-end guys are intact. Questions at right tackle, no doubt. Questions at right tackle for this football team. You got another year of Didi. Didi actually played well last year. You're getting Marquise Lee back in the fold. You got Nick Foles in that upgrade. You hopefully got a running back who's got his head on straight coming into 2019. Like, there are reasons to – to have the
optimistic.
How bad were they, really? You know, like, to ask that question and feel like it's a legit question. How bad were they, really, and how much were they hampered by a combination of injuries and how miserably bad their quarterback play was for 2.5 months?
Yeah, that is the legit question. That is a legit question about that offense, and it's hard to know. But I would be willing to bet that as we all sat there losing – 4/5 of your offensive line and 3/5 of it for half the season, that's going to make a bigger impact than we probably would have even admit or we would like to admit. So, and I think the right tackle issue, them re-signing Josh Wells says to me they'd be okay if they had to start him at right tackle all year. Like, they're okay going with him at right tackle. Because if you're not okay with him being your right tackle for the whole year, why would you sign him? Because to me, it's Josh Wells and it's Cedric Obwehi. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know what you're getting out of Richardson. Mm-hmm. But those two guys, you could probably be okay starting at right tackle for the year. So, yeah, I
you could be okay with it.
And I know people are like, well, you don't want to draft the pass rusher because you got to start making plans for Calais leaving. Well, yeah, you do. He's 35, and it's not like this guy's not – if you draft the pass rusher, it's not like he's not going to make an impact this year. You need something on that third down. You can have more than one pass rusher.
Right.
It is okay to do that.
And it's okay to step back and say you're not drafting him necessarily because you need it for the future or anything. You're drafting him because he's the best player available to you at 7, instead of like trying to shoehorn something that you feel like you need into that and overdrafting somebody else. And then watching a pass rusher that you pass on in 5 years looking up going, man, they had an opportunity to draft that guy, didn't they? And they passed on it to draft the right tackle?
Right.
Like that's the thing that in my head I'm like, draft the best player who's going to be on the defensive
line. Here's the question I'll say to you. What position has a bigger impact on you winning games and playing in the Super Bowl, winning a Super Bowl? Right tackle or a pass rusher? A double-digit sack pass rusher.
Pass rusher, and it's not close.
Right. So that's...
Yeah.
That's why I would go pass rusher. Yeah. If it were me, I'd take Hawkinson. Yeah. I love that kid.
I know. You'd go
tight end. But where I think...
You'd go to a position that means even less than either of those.
I'm telling you, if he can be Kelsey and he or Zach Ertz level or Gronk level, I'd have a hard time passing on it. The impact is
great. If I knew
he
was that, I'd be right there.
But
but
when you take someone at 7,
that's the projection.
That's what you're thinking.
I get it. Yep. Yep. No.
That's what you're thinking. You're like, this guy is going to be a 65... for 800, 900 yards and 10 touchdowns for us, or even better.
You better be thinking that.
Yeah. I mean, that if you take him at 7, you think he's Zach Ertz, you think he's Travis Kelce, you think he's Vernon Davis,
absolutely.
You think he's all those big-time guys, Gonzalez, all that.
Sure.
And it's – but Coughlin is a line guy.
D-line.
He is an offensive and defensive line guy.
Build up front.
I mean, you build with the big
guy.
That's
generally how
it's done. Yeah, so – I would not be surprised if they took Juwan Taylor.
No.
I would also not be surprised if they took one of the defensive linemen.
Yeah, I'm becoming a flag bearer for the drafted defensive lineman there.
Well,
number
the
seven.
Thing that worries me, not worries me, the thing that interests me is that all these mock drafts, I mean, there's a crap ton of mock drafts, and they, not unanimously, but a very, very large percentage of them all have them going right tackle with Juwan Taylor.
Yep.
So those guys hear stuff. That's all I'm saying. Now, I don't, knowing Coughlin and knowing how that place is run, I don't generally think that the Jags are leaking. and to be honest with you, scouts don't always know what they're going to do. Just because you're part of the scouting process and you're part of the guys that have stumped for a player and you're part of the group that has put the film together and looked at it and watched it and he's from your area and you've seen him 10 times in person the last 2 years, just because you did all that does not mean that you know who they're taking, because there's a very, very small group of people on every team that knows who the first pick is going
to
be.
Oh, that's absolutely right. True. We'll open up the phone lines when we return on the other side. Also want to get to the fan feedback spotlight. We're asking you today, what would top your sports bucket list with Augusta, the first run of the Masters getting started up there in Georgia for the first major of the golf season. So we'll get to some of your answers to that and continue along these lines, this discussion about the value of this number 7 pick. Fat Tony, Mike DeRocco here with you on 1010XL.
Hey, what's happening? This is Hall of Famer Brian Dawkins, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
A couple minutes left on the show today. Do want to clean up some things. We're going to get to the fan feedback spotlight here in a moment. Should mention that the Jags did sign defensive back Cody Brown out of the AAF. It's getting close to 40 players that played in that league now joining NFL rosters. So maybe it was doing what it thought it was doing as like a developmental, give guys another shot kind of league, and unfortunately couldn't get to week 9. that's what that gets you. Maybe the XFL will have a bit better plan for all that when it's all said and done. Let's get out to the phone lines for the first time today. And Harry has dialed us up at 641-1010, wants to talk a little bit about the draft. What's going on today, Harry?
Yeah, hey, guys. You guys kind of touched on it. Listen, I watched this Montez Sweat and Ed Oliver, especially Oliver from Houston, on their network workout days. This guy's an amazing, looks like going to be a freak. I can compare him to Ngakoue. He might even be better than Ngakoue. This guy, I don't think you can miss on this guy. And if he's available at number 7, you got to take him. They've got to take him, because we don't know how this Taven Bryant hasn't proven anything to me. And if we're going to rely on him and we don't grab somebody like Ed Oliver out of Houston or Sweat out of Mississippi State, we're gonna be in trouble this year.
Gotcha, Harry. Appreciate the call. Look,
I need a 3 tech.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with either one of them. I think when everything is said and done, I would guess Edge is a little bit more likely.
Impactful, too.
Yeah, for them, they do love their 3 techs. There's no doubt about that. I don't think any team in the league loves 3 techs quite the way that the Jacksonville Jaguars do. But they paid huge dividends getting them, you know? And so I love Ed Oliver. I do. I've loved Ed Oliver for a while now. And when the whole draft process started and people were talking about him going in like the 20s, I was like, that's nuts.
Not happening.
Like, that's so crazy. And then he went through the workout and everyone was like, oh, like he's that kind of athlete. And I'm like, yeah, he's been that kind of athlete for a while. And then you watch him humiliate people. And I get it. He's not playing SEC competition, that kind of thing. I totally understand that. But it's right there. For anybody that's looking, it's right there. With that Oliver. So I've been on board with that for a while now, and I'd totally be on board for Sweat, too. Like, I just, closer and closer we get, the more and more I'm circling the wagons on it needs to be a defensive lineman, the closer and closer we get. Even more so than if there was a left tackle. Like, if you wanted to fight me with, like, Jonah Williams, I'd be like, okay.
Right.
I'm listening to you on that.
Yeah, left tackle. Then you could just take Cam and flip him to right.
Flip him to right, potentially do that kind of thing.
It's, what if he falls?
It's trying to convince me that right tackle is what they need me to be doing at 7 in a draft flooded with like premier defensive linemen at the top of the draft. Like, it's just, you're not, I don't know if you can sell me on that one. Like, I just don't know if you're going to be able to.
I'm trying to think of an argument to give you to take the right tackle over the potential big time edge rusher. And the only thing I could say is clearly they want to give Foles everything he needs to succeed. A big-time run game would help him significantly, obviously.
Sure.
They're not giving up on a big-time run game. Just because they signed Foles doesn't mean they're going to throw it 70% of the time. They still want to run the ball a ton. They don't know what they have in any of those right tackles except for Josh Wells. So, you know, if you want to run the ball, you're laughing. I know.
No,
I can't,
no, it's
I,
just like, it's except they don't Josh know what they Wells. Have in any of these guys except Josh Wells.
Right.
Here we go.
You know, they power run, you know, that's all I can give you, is that would be the argument to do it.
Oh, I know that's the argument to do it.
But I can't get you anywhere to close to bite on it.
The rebuttal is, yeah, but there's a bunch of really good defensive linemen, and you're picking seventh.
Well, it's not.
Like, it's as much about where they're picking and when they're picking and what people are talking about with what's available to them in this draft as anything else. For a team that I don't think has a – I don't think right tackle is any more glaring a need than depth on the defensive line. Like, I don't think it is. And so trying to convince me that, well, they need a right tackle, well, they could use another defensive end. You know, like, that's what I hear in my own head. I'm like, yeah, but they could use another pass rusher. Yeah, like, they could use that, too.
They only have two pass rushers right now.
Yeah.
And one of them's 33, and you don't know.
And I mean, the other one's under contract for another 12 months.
Correct. Which you wouldn't think that they're going to let him go.
They better not.
Yeah, I mean, you would think they'll figure something out at some point. But it's hard to ignore that that's a major need. And I know, you know, like I said, we went over the tight end thing. That's, to me, that's a major need for them as well. Now, they may not view it that way, and it is a deep class of tight ends.
Sure.
So
I think it's a major need at a less important position. Like,
yes.
That's the way I feel. I think it's a major need at a less, like, it's just not a premier place.
Right.
Like, when you have a need on offensive line or defensive line, that's a need.
Right.
When you have a need at quarterback, that's a need.
That is the trump
right?
need,
like,
yeah.
Those are the things that I guess I'm more looking at. Let's welcome in the boys of XL Primetime.
The 2-Minute Drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
Waiting in line is so 2018. App your way to the front of the line. Order Moe's online or in the app. Walk in, grab the food, and go.
As we welcome in Hacker, are you on the tight end train at 7?
Tony, I'm on. Get the best available player, whether that's tight end, whether that's offensive tackle. Although, hearing you guys, if it's Ed Oliver or Rashawn Gary or somebody like that, I think I'd be fine there too. Right tackle does give me pause, but if the defensive line value is simply too good to pass up, I'd be totally fine with him taking that position at 7.
So if you were trying to put together a big board in your own head, right, like, do you think you would have T.J. Hockenson as a tight end anywhere near 7?
Oh, yeah. No, that's, if they take Hockenson at 7, I think I'd be okay with that. I'm actually a little more intrigued with the other Iowa kid. No offense. I like him as well.
Sure.
Irv Smith from Alabama, who's visited Jacksonville over the last couple of days. I wonder if you could look into getting – I don't think Fant will be there. Maybe Irv Smith falls to that 39 range in round 2. I don't know if you'll be that lucky. Perfect ideal scenario would certainly be get a D lineman or an offensive tackle at 7 and have Irv Smith fall to you at 39. Anything after that would be gravy to me.
No, I'd love for one of those premier tight ends to fall to him there in the second round, and I'd be waiting on it. Like, if it was me, I'd be waiting for it. What do you guys have coming up?
Yeah, one of the things we're doing today, let me ask D-Rock, I mean, we're doing pre-draft position battles, right? Obviously, the rookies aren't here yet. We don't know who's going to be here.
Right.
But the players that are here, they're going to report on Monday. What are the position battles? Right tackle right now would
right
be a
tackle.
Position battle.
Yeah.
Is linebacker, Jake Ryan, Leon Jacobs, a position battle?
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that plays out, whether that is Miles out to strong side
right.
and Jake in the middle, and then on the pass downs, Miles is back in at the middle. So I don't know that that's a – I think Ryan's going to be the guy over
Leon
Jacobs anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that I would say that's a battle.
And then I don't know if, you know, second, third wide receiver, there's probably some issues there. Where does Chris Conley – fit into this whole grand scheme?
Well, who's your starting three tech? Is Taven, right?
I mean, Calais and Ngakoue. Yeah, I guess Taven, but
I think it might be Darius.
Well, Darius, and you got Avery Jones too.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, then you got a. You
I
need
think
a,
Dar- like I would see Jones
so you put
as your starting
Avery,
nose.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Is your starting tight end Jeff Swaim right now?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, over O'Shaughnessy.
Yes.
I like O'Shaughnessy. I mean, they brought him back.
Yeah, they did. They did. They brought Josh Wells and Tyler Shatley back, too. But, yes, he is starting tight end over James O'Shaughnessy.
Well, see, I like O'Shaughnessy. But, no, we're going to talk a lot of Jaguars, Tony, and Very excited. Leon Searcy's good buddy, Nick Anderson.
Oh, cool.
Former member of the Orlando Magic, obviously. Does a lot of work with Magic TV. Orlando in the playoffs for the first time in 7 years.
They got the fever.
There you do, man. Toronto on Saturday. By the way, Nick Anderson scheduled to join us at 1 o'clock. Of course, I'm going to Kenny Chesney Saturday because my wife is the biggest Kenny Chesney fan on the planet. Mm-hmm. So what does the NBA do? They schedule Orlando-Toronto game one at 5 o'clock.
They're listening.
Saturday afternoon. Right before the Kenny Chesney
concert.
You're
going to have to DVR it or watch it on your phone.
Or go to a sports bar somewhere and catch Kenny after the game, something along those lines.
Maybe. Maybe. Good luck with that
one. All right, guys.
All right, there he goes. There's Hacker. XL Primetime coming up next. Matt Hayes, Leon Searcy. Is Joe C in today or is he got
– He's
got it. All right. I didn't know if he'd have master's duties or not with round one going on. We'll get you an update for that in a moment as well. We were asking fans today, what is the top of your sports bucket list? I know for me – right now it would be Lambeau because I've never had the opportunity to go there, or probably a Champions League final. Like even over a World Cup final for me, I think I'd rather go to a Champions League final if I had my druthers. What would top the list for you?
This is so stupid, but I got screwed out of covering the Rose Bowl twice when I was covering UF. Matt Hayes is laughing at me because he's covered like 100 Rose Bowls. I want to go cover a Rose Bowl. I want to go to the Rose Bowl. That is really not an exclusive, I guess,
no,
bucket list thing, but I mean,
yeah, it's your list.
That's
man.
My list, right? I mean, I want to go to the cover of the stinking Rose Bowl because I got hosed out of it twice, Alabama and Tennessee.
Well, we'll see if we get you back in next Thursday, and I can argue with you more about tight end just being overvalued at 7.
Attaboy. I'm looking forward to
all
it.
All right. So for Mike Taracco, for myself, Tony Smith, for Emmanuel Thalaran, for Mike Dempsey, that'll do it for us here on a Thursday XL Primetime coming up next here on 1010 XL.
Joe Jacksonville, let's go. 2 more.